Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Thursday. Oh, later on, Gilbert Gottfried will join us at 10:35.
Not that much later on. I'm looking forward to it as well.
Roughly a half hour, just shy of a half an hour. If you want to be a part of the show, a couple ways to do it. Go to broadcasting school, learn a trade, and come and join us. Or call us at 312-981-7200.
Did you go to broadcasting school? Or are you in it now?
No, I'm still still learning, actually. You know what? I don't. Can I just take a moment to ask you, because there's something I saw yesterday that I've seen in the past, and I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Talk to me.
All right. I was watching the Bulls play the Boston Celtics yesterday for Game 5 of their series, and I've seen
Did they win before?
No, they came in second.
Oh.
Which is
better than third.
Yeah, you don't want to ever come in third in a basketball game. And they've avoided that all season long. There's not been one game the Bulls have played that they've come in third. A couple times close, but not last. All right. So here's what I've noticed. Now, you and I have in the past talked about when you're an NBA player and you throw a free throw, you should make that almost every time.
I would say 98% of the time.
I'm with you.
Margin of error. It is called a free throw for a reason.
No one's blocking you. It's the
same
distance.
And you get a free point. Sometimes,
yeah, every bat. Right, right. There's almost no excuse. Now, there's been some players that have been better at it than others. Shaquille O'Neal only hit one free throw in his illustrious career. He made one free throw one time.
This is not true.
I can't believe how horrible he was. I'm not even kidding.
I don't get it. And I know there's ways to make the guy shooting the free throw nervous. Like, sometimes they'll sell those giant, I don't know, it's like one of those swimming noodles.
It is very much like that.
So people who sit behind the basket will wave those, and maybe that'll knock them out. Or sometimes they'll put up giant heads. Did you ever see guys do this? They'll have a...
Like a Steve Cochran head?
Not that big, but like that sort of thing where it's like a giant head. And I don't know, maybe that's going to scare the player anyway.
Do they yell Crawford?
Yeah, they'll yell Crawford. Crawford. And the guy will go, my name's not Crawford. But that's a chance.
See, that would be a distraction. If your name's Crawford,
I would just think,
oh, they love me.
I'm going to start attending sporting events and just chanting Crawford just to see what happens. All right, so last night I'm watching the Bulls and the Celtics, and like I said, I have seen this before, never understood it, but last night it happened quite a bit. A guy misses a free throw and then gets high fives all around. But the high five, in my opinion, should go for, that's a reward for doing something correctly. Not, well, you missed. High five me. No, you don't get to high five on a miss.
You got to
earn
those
darn millennial basketball players.
They're,
is what it is.
That's
trophy
what it is.
For everyone.
So they get a high five for effort?
Well, hold on. You guys, there's multiple different types of the high five. This is an encouragement high five. Like, hey, you got the next one.
Kevin, I don't like it.
No, you need to earn a high
five. You have to earn a high five.
You got to have your buddy's back if he misses the field throw.
I disagree.
No, the butt pat is for you'll get it next time. The high five is way to go.
Similar concept. Some people do them both at the same time.
When I was a kid, Kevin, President Roosevelt said to everybody in America, you only get a high five if you make the free throw. I remember I attended many basketball games as a kid, and when a guy would make a free throw, the team would come around, and everyone got a high five.
Not from you.
Not from me, but from the other players. But last night, because then there's no reward in hitting the high five. You know you're going to, the hitting the free throw, you know you're going to get a high five regardless of if it goes in or if it doesn't.
Well, I got to be honest with you, a high five doesn't mean that much.
Technically.
$100? That'd be
better.
Would you
rather have your team look away and go, ooh, yikes.
Right.
Kind of.
I would appreciate a guy on the team who, when you missed a free throw, would just walk up to you and casually say, how about getting the ball in the net the next time?
Or I would have hit that.
Right, right.
Well, I don't know that I would take it that route, but you would go, hey, better luck next time. But you don't high five them.
Right.
You don't, you got to earn it.
You have to earn a high five. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's very upsetting to see that. Because a couple of times in crucial situations, now the Bulls ended up losing by what, Ryan, 11?
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
So if you make those 11 free throws, that game goes a different way. I don't know if they missed 11 all night, but they missed a good share of them last night.
And the incentive would be the high five to hit those.
Well,
that's your incentive. When you go to the free throw line, hey, I really want to get a high five.
Right. Right. Maybe before the game, you say to the players, ain't nothing better than a good high five. You know, just to get them all charged up like, oh, I would like one of those high fives. What do I have to do to get one? Well, hit a free throw or two, and you'll get a couple of them.
I played basketball in high school, and, you know, I was a high school player, and I wasn't the best on the team. And, yeah, I'd miss a free throw here and there. But the practices we had conditioning, we had layup practice, yeah. And guess what we spent a lot of time doing?
Free throws.
Yep.
Such an important part of the game. It's like the bunt in baseball. It's kind of just gone away. It's like it's not that important
anymore. I hate the bunt. I hate the bunt, and I hate walking pitchers, and now you can just, like, opt out. Yeah, you can just go, yeah, I'm going to walk this guy.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I know it's strategery, but I don't like it.
You do it in softball, like adult league softball. They do that. Just say, just put him on. We don't need to waste the pitches.
Be
you don't like that at
softball.
But from a pitcher perspective, that saves you four pitches off your pitch count, too.
That's true, too. Although, it saves your arm, but for the record books, you've still thrown the four pitches. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Yeah. So if you're at Wrigley Field and you're watching a pitcher's pitch count and they automatically put a guy on first base, that
gets
added?
I think that registers.
Added?
That's not fair because he didn't pitch that amount.
Yeah, I don't.
The other day during the Cubs game, there was a pitcher. Now, that rule has changed in baseball. Forever, the intentional walk, you had to throw the ball four times and then the guy got the walk. But this year they've changed to speed up the game. You just
stupid
say to
move.
The umpire, the catcher says to the umpire, we want to intentionally walk him, and they point toward first and he goes. Well, there was a pitcher, I don't remember who the Cubs were playing, who had no idea. He just sees the guy go up to the batter's box and then walk to first, and he's looking around like, wait.
Really?
You can't just do that, but you can just do that.
Don't players get informed of the new rules, usually?
Normally, there'll be
a
memo or something that the players can read, but he's looking around like, you guys saw what I just saw, right? This guy didn't do anything, and he's just walking towards first. He seemed very upset about it.
That's great.
The other thing I wanted to say really quickly about the free throw was one of my daughters played volleyball, and when one of the girls on the team, now this was 7th and 8th grade volleyball, when one of the girls tried to hit the ball back, as you're supposed to do in volleyball, it comes to you, you hit it back. Whenever she would try, not just one girl, but anybody on the team, and it was unsuccessful, she would hit the ball out. Then the team would rally around her and give her high fives like, well, you tried. And to me, that's where that belongs, is like in grade school or maybe even high school. Like, you gave it your effort, didn't quite work, try harder next time. But once you hit the pros.
Still, I don't think a high five is acceptable in that situation.
Earned.
I think a pat on the shoulder.
Right.
Hey, it's all right.
They're there, as people used to say.
Like a million years.
Remember?
That's when somebody's crying. Well, they're there.
They're there, they would say.
What a stupid saying.
Old movies. Where? Here. I don't know why people said that. Would you feel it, like if something bad happened to you and I said, Wendy, they're there.
I'd punch you.
Right.
I'd go, shut up.
Right.
They're
I just
there.
Had something traumatic happen. You can't make me feel better with that.
But in that high school situation, I think like a pat on the shoulder or on the back going, hey, it's all right.
You gave
but
it
you
your
don't
all.
High five even then.
I don't like it. It's got to stop.
You got to win it to be in it.
You have. That's it. What you just said.
That's not right.
Right.
You have to be in it to win it. I know, but
go.
I changed it.
Right.
To be in it with the high five.
There is no I in high five.
There is, too.
Oh, there is. Oh. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more shows. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. We were talking about you watching the Bulls game, which mm-hmm. good for you because I haven't watched a Bulls game since Michael Jordan retired.
Oh, that's been a while.
I know. And you had a problem with the missing of a free throw and a high five that was administered.
That's right. And I have filed a grievance with the NBA, with the league.
Let us know how that goes.
All right. I'm sure they'll get back to me sometime today.
Let us know when Mike and Mike call you to be on their show.
All right.
Melanie wants to chime in on this. Hello, Melanie.
Hi, Wendy. Love your show, you guys,
Thank you. Thank you. So
I was listening, and I agree with Bill that they should not be high-fiving for when they missed, but I have an alternative. I think a group hug is in order.
A group hug would be nice.
We're talking in the NBA or high school?
Both.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be cute.
A show of unity. I like that.
Bring it in, big boy.
Come on, fellas. Give me one.
Yeah. It would certainly make it more interesting.
So would that be more incentive for them to make it? Because they're like, I don't want a group hug in front of all these people. I better make this basket.
That would be.
Maybe.
Yeah, a disincentive. I could see that
it
as
is.
Well.
It definitely is. Thanks, Melanie. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. What a great idea.
Smart move.
I like the group hug.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Frank wants to say something.
I don't think we should let him.
Oh, come on.
I'm afraid.
All Frank, right. Come on. Bring it in for a group hug.
Be very afraid, Bill. Be very afraid.
I will be. What's up, Frank?
I'll give you an example. When you're playing and you miss one free throw, the game isn't over. You know, you still have to continue on, and it's a motivational tactic. And like in bowling, if you're going up for your second ball to try to get the spare,
yeah,
and you don't get the spare, your teammates are going to say, "Come on, keep your head up, get your head straight, focus. This game's not over." So it's just a tactic to for your teammates to keep everybody inspirational, because a lot of times the game is mental.
So are you in favor of it? You're okay with the way it's played out now? A guy misses a free throw and everybody comes up and high fives, and you say, let's go with that. Let's run with that.
Bill, it's usually something that's very short. You miss a free throw, everybody comes up to you, you know, within 2 or 3 seconds, gives you a high five and say, let's move on. Forget about what just happened, because it's not going to help us to put your head down about it.
Can I ask you something though, Frank? What if they make what if they make the free throw? What if they make the shot? Do they also get that high five?
Yeah, I think they get a low five. Like, you know, they'll reach down and say, you know, give me some skin.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really no big celebration going on, because the game's not over.
How about this? How about the players carry a diagram of a basket and they show it to the guy who missed and go, you want to put the ball in this.
All right, now you're just being a smart
butt. You want to get the ball in the basket.
They know what they're supposed to do.
I guess.
Well, thank you, Frank. High fives.
You're welcome.
Woo! Come on.
High fives.
Woo!
All right, bye, Frank. Thank you.
All right, and Gary has an idea. Gary, your idea, please share.
Well, I think they should change the rule, and if the NBA player misses the free throw, he gets to take one step closer to the basket.
Oh, I like that.
Try again, like in kindergarten. Give him a little chance to do that.
Would there ever be a time where he would have to take a step back? This is like a game of Mother May I at this point. Is there ever a time where the player would have to take a step backward?
If he makes it, the next time he's up at the line, he can take a step back.
Oh, interesting.
Like it.
That's a very good idea.
It would add some time to the game, though.
That's all right. Who's watching anyway?
Bill.
Thanks.
Thanks, Gary.
We could do it Bozo Bucket style and they could move.
That's
like
a great
farther
idea.
Farther back every time you hit it.
Now, with the last idea, a guy like Shaquille O'Neal, whose percentage of hitting it was just not good, and he gets to move up a step every time, he'd actually at some point be behind the basket trying to get the ball in.
No, because when he's right near it, he could just pretty much put it in.
Right, he's that tall. All right.
Wouldn't even have to jump.
All right.
And finally, hi, John.
Hi. I don't think when they miss there should be no high fives, no group hugs,
right.
No pats on the butt for a missed one. They should, all the other teammates should do something like, geez, oh, come on, man.
Right. That's the natural move.
I could have done that.
Right.
Yeah, he doesn't want to get ridiculed every time he misses, so he's going to start making, right?
That yes, I like that. That's the B.F. Skinner approach. Very smart. All right, thank you. Thanks so much, Sean.
If they're going to continue with the high fives for a miss, then when they make it, they should get high five stickers and lollipops.
That's a good idea.
Because then you can decipher the difference of
right,
the high five.
Right. There needs to be a better reward for succeeding. If you're getting the same exact reward for failing or succeeding, there's no impetus to get the ball in. And then you have chaos, Wendy.
You do have chaos.
Yep.
I want to talk about something that I heard in the news, and then I went directly to the Chicago Tribune to find it. United Airlines has put a full-page ad in the Chicago Tribune.
Is this the first time that United has been in the newspaper lately?
The first time for advertising. Now, they used to advertise all the time. I mean,
I
honestly, United was really United and American Airlines. I guess Continental for a while.
Yeah.
But United's always
Don't
been
leave
the
off
big
Braniff.
One.
Braniff, you get a lot of angry phone calls. TWA, Braniff.
Oh, TWA.
Midway Airlines.
Wow, how long did that last?
Not too long.
They put out a full-page ad, and I would like to share it with you. Do we have time?
Yeah.
Sure. All right. It's United Airlines, a Star Alliance member, and it says, "Actions speak louder than words. We can never say we are sorry enough for the shameful way one of our customers was treated aboard United's flight 3411. Isn't that a weird way to start an advertisement?
It's very honest, very bold. I like it. High five.
They should...
High five.
They should have said that immediately.
Yeah.
Remember he said, you know, we just were relocating a passenger or whatever.
Reaccommodating.
Yeah. That day, corporate policies were placed ahead of our shared values, and procedures got in the way of employees doing what they know is right. As CEO, responsibility ultimately falls to me. Meaningful actions will speak louder than words. Starting today, United is changing how we fly, serve, and respect our customers.
No more dragging people off the planes?
No, in fact, that's all written in black ink, and then in blue ink and bullet-pointed, they have some new rules. Can I share them with you?
Yeah.
Law enforcement will not remove customers from a flight, and customers will not be required to give up their seat once on board, except in matters of safety or security.
But that's a pretty gray statement. I agree with it, but then you could call almost anything a matter of safety or security, couldn't you?
No.
You can't?
No, I don't think so.
If you're the airline, no matter what's happening, you can't go out just, you know what, for safety reasons, sir, you must leave.
I think they have to be specific about it.
All right.
But I don't know. And here's
those were the first two things that they announced almost like right away.
Oh,
The bread and butter now is coming up with these next eight you're going to read off. Those are kind of the newer ones.
In the compensation.
Yeah, that's coming.
Yeah.
This is the second point.
Yeah.
Bullet point.
Yeah.
In blue. In a case of overbooking, we will identify volunteers much earlier.
Good. Like at the, like before everybody gets on the plane, they mean?
Yeah, because the first one says you will not be required to give up your seat once you're on board.
All right.
So that's a good policy. This should have been in effect before.
Well, and to be honest with you, that flight was overbooked even before those crew members tried to board. We found out that that was overbooked by a full person before even those four crew members tried to get on that 3411 flight in Chicago.
Huh.
Okay, the third bullet point. We will increase incentives for voluntary rebooking up to $10,000.
That's
I'm going to give up my seat every time I fly.
Well, that one's tricky because up to $10,000 is great. It's never going to get to $10,000.
I bet it will now.
Do you think so?
I think the first few that volunteer, they're going to reward and try and stick with this just to, so everybody says, hey, oh my God, United is awesome. They gave me 10 grand just for giving up my seat.
But if there's 180 people on a flight, right?
Everybody's going to opt out.
There's a bidding. At some point, somebody, once it gets in the $1,000, $2,000 range, that's decent money. I can't see it ever getting up to $10,000. I mean, it's a beautiful number to look at and go, wow, wouldn't that be nice? But I can't imagine a plane full of people all agreeing, let's not do anything until it gets to $10,000.
Well, if nobody takes it, I mean, do you think Dr. Dow would have been dragged off a flight if somebody said, oh, you're giving me 10 grand? Psh, sure, go ahead.
No, but that's what I'm saying, is somebody on that flight would have done it. What was, Ryan,
was $1,300.
It was $1,300. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember if it was 15 or 13. All right, so for there, people are like, I don't know. But once it gets past that, 2,000, 3,000, you're going to see somebody jump and go, I'll take it for 2,000, for 3,000.
I would wait it out.
But you have to have everybody on the plane doing
exactly
that.
Yeah, you got to find like that Chicago to Orlando flight during the height of spring break or something like that, right?
Right.
The one you know they're going to overbook.
Right. All right, here's another one. We will have a dedicated team to find other travel options for customers who give up their seat. That's
good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Another one, we will eliminate the red tape on permanently lost bags with a new no questions asked $1,500 reimbursement.
All right.
Aren't people just going to say they lost their bags then? United's going to go down with this.
Do.
And finally, we will develop new tools and training for employees to solve issues for our customers in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Learn more about these commitments and many other changes at hub.united.com. We are working harder than ever for the privilege to serve you, and I know we will be a stronger, better, and more customer-focused airline as a result. Sincerely, Oscar Munoz, CEO, United Airlines.
It says that at the bottom.
Yeah, the ba-ba-ba's.
It says at the very bottom. All that is very, very nice, but all that should have already been in place. I mean, now because we know what happened, they have to put it in writing, but it should have already been in
place. But the key is they're doing this to show, because remember, they're going to get hauled up in front of Congress now for these hearings. They're going to say, look what we've been doing. You know, all the stuff that you're saying we should do, we're doing it.
Exactly. We're playing nice.
I still think it should have never come to the dragging situation.
Oh, sure.
I mean, and I know everybody is against, you know, you have to give up your seat if they tell you to.
Yeah.
I don't know that you have to, and now they're saying you don't have to. No one will be required to give up their seat.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we'll take a break.
Give up your seat.
Ryan, I've already given it up. Ryan will give you some news, and then Gilbert Gottfried stops by. What else could we possibly do? It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, can I ask you a trick question?
Yes.
Who is funnier? Who is funnier than Gilbert Gottfried? Anybody? Can you think of anybody?
No.
Nobody. Gilbert, can you think of anybody who's funnier than Gilbert Gottfried?
Adolf Eichmann.
Adolf Eichmann. Yeah. People don't realize he was quick with the one-liners.
Yeah, yeah, very funny guy. See, you just look at the bad stuff he did, and you forget.
Right, that he had some very good, funny years.
He had
years.
Some witty limericks that he used to tell.
He used to be on Major Bowe's Amateur Hour, and people loved him. And then politics got in the way.
Yeah.
It always does.
I feel lost.
Gilbert Gottfried is here. He's appearing at all the Zanies tonight, tomorrow. We'll give you all the information. You want to see him at Zanies in Chicago tonight, Zanies in St. Charles tomorrow, Zanies in Rosemont on Saturday. Zanies.com has your information. How are you?
Oh, okay. And I should plug my podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. And they made a documentary about me.
They did?
Yeah, it's called Gilbert. Uh-huh. I don't know what the title means. And so by having a documentary means I died 10 years ago.
Oh, that's so sad. You seem so young.
Yes. But I discovered penicillin before I died. I discovered it because I was diagnosed with syphilis. But
oh,
still.
Well, that's still.
Yeah. It's impressive.
That's so the good with the bad.
It is. Yes. It's a mix. It's a mixed bag. What an honor, though, to have a film crew say, you're the guy. We want to follow you around with cameras all the time. That's an honor.
Yeah, it was this guy, this filmmaker, Neil Berkeley, and he said he's always wanted to make a documentary about me. And I said, you should set your aspirations much higher than that. Like, first you should do a documentary about Yakov Smirnoff.
Right. And build toward you eventually.
Yes.
What did you learn about yourself in doing this documentary?
I learned what I knew from before, that I never wanted to do a documentary.
This became obvious.
It was kind of like, and watching it, I've watched it like 2-3 times already. And it was like being what hell must be. Like, I think when you die and go to hell, they have a giant screen there, and they play your life there.
That'd be awful.
Yeah, and that's what it's like.
I want to bring up another movie that you were in that I saw this year that is my favorite movie of the year, and it is called Life Animated. What a beautiful, beautiful film. And I don't know how much we can give away, but you play a very integral role in this movie.
Yeah, because what happened, there was a news story in the New York Times that this, that's great.
Ron Suskind.
Ron Suskind. Mm-hmm. It's great that I forget him already. Mm-hmm. And he was writing that he had an autistic son. And when he was 3 years old, he was dropping deeper and deeper into autism, where he couldn't speak to anybody. But he would watch Aladdin films all day long. And so one day, the father went into the room and he saw that the son had a puppet of my character, Iago the Parrot, from Aladdin. And he put it on his hand. And he started imitating my voice and talking to his son. And the son looked at the parrot like it was an old friend of his.
Yeah.
And immediately had a conversation with the parrot that he couldn't have with his father.
Right.
That's amazing.
Right. Yeah. But then you were kind enough to come and to meet this boy. And you could just see it in his face that meeting you much like Wendy and myself.
Yeah.
it made this child, it made his life to finally meet you.
And helped him start communicating.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. We had his mother, Cornelia Susskind, on the air with us to talk about it. Nothing but great things to say about you. Mm-hmm. And
Of course, I'm practically Christ. How can
you kind of are to her? And the doctors thought she was crazy. Like, you know, well, I just think maybe we could open him up by meeting the man behind the cartoon. And boy, was she right.
No, see, they thought she was crazy. She said, I'm a fan of Gilbert Gottfried.
That's why
and
they thought
all
she was
the doctors
crazy.
Said, he's not funny. What are you, crazy? I've seen him on stage, and he sucks.
But the doctors agree. Usually 4 out of 5 doctors agree. This time it was 5 out of 5.
And then, and the 4 out of 5 doctors then, for no reason at all, recommended sugar-free gum.
For patients who chew gum.
Yes, exactly.
They always throw in, there's always a consult.
That's so stupid.
Right.
Why would you care if you don't chew gum?
Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore.
Like, I'm not chewing gum now, but but since they recommend it, I better start.
What is it like for your children? You have 2 kids, 2 beautiful kids, to hear their dad's voice in some classic cartoons and Disney films. Does it matter to them? Is it a big deal to them?
No.
No.
It's funny. They were at one point were watching Aladdin a lot.
Yeah.
And then I realized I become like all the other fathers going, hey, shut that off. Right. Like, enough already with that. But yeah, they like my son who's 7, my wife asked him, you know, what would you like to be when you grow up? Yeah. And he goes, I want to be like an actor. And he goes, I want to be a funny actor.
Oh.
And she said, oh, you mean like daddy? And he goes, no, like Jim Carrey. Yeah, so so I quickly took him aside and said, well, let Jim Carrey pay for your clothes and your college education.
Did the right thing.
Yeah.
Teach that kid a lesson. Did the right thing. Gilbert Gottfried is here, everybody. You can see him at all the different Zanies this week. Zanies in Chicago tonight, Zanies in St. Charles tomorrow night, Zanies in Rosemont on Saturday. And if you have a Zanies I've not mentioned, give us a call and Gilbert will appear there. Stick around. We've got more ahead. We're 312-981-7200 if you want in. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Gilbert Gottfried is here. He's appearing at Zanies in Chicago tonight, Zanies in St. Charles tomorrow night, Zanies in Rosemont on Saturday. Go to zanies.com. All the information's there. Also has a podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. How could it not be hysterical? Gilbert, we have a mutual friend in common, and that is Norm MacDonald. And Norm MacDonald said to me, the next time you see Gilbert...
next time you see Gilbert, and then you're talking to him. I don't know. Yes, maybe his name. You know, Gilbert. His name.
That would be Norm MacDonald. That's Norm right there.
I don't know. You're talking to him. And you're sitting next to him talking. Or maybe on the phone. Maybe on the phone you can even be talking.
The key to him is... Oh, go on. I'm
sorry.
Yeah,
he's sending postcards.
He like always talking. Likes to mention dog. Because he'll go, and ask him about his dog. Find out if he's got a dog. But he said to me, you got to have Gilbert talk about the days of Groucho Marx. And you know what I'm referring to, right?
See, I got familiar with the Marx Brothers first. And, you know, because like TV used to show a lot of old movies on the regular channels.
Sure.
And so I got to be a real Marx Brothers fan. And then they would still have like You Bet Your Life would pop up. And so I was a tremendous Groucho fan. He was always so quick and just funny and so fast. And then he wasn't on TV for a while. And then like the Dick Cavett show and stuff would bring him back.
Yeah.
And by then he was, you saw this old man shuffle out with like a golf, you know, he'd have like a beret with golf balls on it with funny faces. And he'd have a cigar. And, oh, geez, let me shut this off.
That's
this
Norm MacDonald calling you. Yeah. Doing a great job.
Put on your dog. I want to talk to your dog.
Can you be your dog on the phone? Because sometimes I talk on the phone. Yeah. And so Groucho would come out, and you're waiting for him still to be the, and from, you know, the duck soup Groucho. And he'd go, you know, years ago, in my day, you would have a cup of coffee. Now, coffee, it was a beverage that they would make out of coffee beans. And they would grind the coffee beans. This was in my day. They used to grind coffee beans. And then they would boil the coffee beans in water. And people would drink this out of a cup. Back years ago, a cup was something that people would drink out of. Because you would pour the beverage into the cup. And you could drink coffee or tea. Tea was something that was made out of tea leaves. Back in my day, leaves was something that would grow on a tree. And you would boil the leaves, much like you do with coffee beans, after they were ground up.
So his whole life...
yes! Still got it.
He wasn't as fast.
Yeah, not as quick.
As the golden
era. But still as funny.
But
I became fascinated by the old Groucho. I used to be able to imitate the young Groucho.
Right.
But then I became so fascinated with the old Groucho. That's all I can do now.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I'm crying.
Not to end on a sad note, but give us a minute or two about Don Rickles, because losing Don Rickles was so hard for me. I loved him so much.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I've never met Don Rickles.
You've never
got
to.
In all the years of doing this, I've never once met him.
Oh.
Yeah, I would have loved to. I would have loved just to sat and had lunch with Don Rickles.
As somebody who kind of walks a thin line during your stand-up, and I say that because they do. Yeah. They paint a thin line on the stage, and then you balance and you walk it. I don't know how you do it. But what do you think it was about Don Rickles? He consistently said things that society tells us we're not supposed to laugh at. What was the magic there?
I don't know. He was so funny at it, too. And I remember hearing... One time, Rickles was in a restaurant, and he saw Morgan Freeman walk by him. And Rickles yelled out, "Hey, Morgan, get back in the kitchen."
Oh, great. Great. So we know that that's not right.
Totally
and yet,
wrong. Don and Rickles yet gets there's away no with way it. Not to laugh at it.
Well, you saw him on one of the, I think it was his last appearance on David Letterman. It was he and Denzel Washington. And he just berated Denzel Washington start to finish. And Denzel Washington loved it.
Yeah.
He couldn't stop
laughing.
Well,
that's got to be a compliment when Don Rickles busts you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, it was like an honor.
Yeah.
If he insulted you.
Nothing better than that.
I'm so sad you never got to meet him.
No. Never
You'd
had the opportunity.
Your paths would cross.
Yeah. Ugh.
Is there someone else other than Don Rickles that you say to yourself, I've been doing this a long time. At some point, I'm going to meet them and work with them, but it just hasn't happened?
Oh, so many.
Yeah.
And it's, I think that way, too, with the podcast.
Yes.
On my podcast, I like to get, you know, people I've always wanted to meet.
Sometimes more obscure.
Oh, yeah.
That's all right.
And, then they want, one time Jack Carter agreed to do the podcast.
Didn't we just bring him up yesterday?
Yeah. And he died the night before. Yeah. And so, and there's constantly people I'll see, I'll find out die, and I'll go, why didn't we ask him?
Oh. My mom used to tell my brother and I that when she was a kid and they would watch Ed Sullivan, they looked forward to the comic that would be on every week. But whenever Jack Carter was on, they felt sad because they didn't get any laughs. But for some reason, Ed Sullivan loved him. He kept bringing it up.
And the reason I really wanted him on this show is he was one of the most bitter people in the business.
Oh, yeah.
And there was nothing he wouldn't, like, hold back.
I know.
If you'd mention a name, he'd tear them to shreds. And not like a Don Rickles funny way.
Right.
He would just say, he would just wish them to die.
So your goal in having him on would have been what? What would you wanted to achieve? Just to meet him and talk and get his stories?
Oh, yeah. His stories would have been great. But we've had older people on the show. Like, we recorded. It hasn't played yet, but Carl Reiner.
Oh,
I did an interview with him. He was great.
Yeah.
I did an interview with Dick Van Dyke.
Oh.
And I did an interview with a former child actress named Janet Ann Gallo, who only like horror freaks know who she is. She was the little girl in Ghost of Frankenstein with Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
How old is she now?
I don't know. I mean, she was like about 8 years old at the time did that movie.
In her 70s, probably.
Yeah,
right?
I guess so.
Wow.
But she was telling stories how she and Lon Chaney and Bela Lugosi in their full monster makeups that they had on would play hide-and-go-seek with her. And I thought, this would have been my ideal childhood.
Exactly.
So that's on my podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, that you can look up on gilbertgottfried.com.
It's always great to see you. Whenever you're not here, Wendy and I always talk about you and say, you can't get funnier than that guy, Gilbert Gottfried, and you always prove yourself.
And you could always see it, because when you watch me, you go, well, he can't get any funnier. He's trying.
He's hit the ceiling.
He's trying to, but that's basically the
that's
peak.
All right.
And it's downhill. And my documentary is Gilbert.
And people can see that where?
I don't know.
It
just came out. And it's been playing in Tribeca.
Oh, in the film festival.
Not the festival, just in that neighborhood. You can't get it outside.
That still counts. Yeah. Don't be bad. That still counts. Go see Gilbert at Zanies in Chicago tonight, or Zanies in St. Charles tomorrow night, or Zanies in Rosemont on Saturday. Zanies.com has your information. And again, his podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, because it was nice to sit here in the chair.
Now, what's a chair?
In my day, a chair was something that you would sit on.
Yes.
If you got tired of standing up. It wasn't like a bed that you would lie down in. You couldn't lie down in a chair. But you would sit, and it would take weight off your feet. Now, back in my day, feet were something.
Who's going to tell Groucho we got to go?
Thank you, Gilbert.
Thank you, Gilbert.
More after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you so much for that information, Ryan. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and I heard these news reports yesterday as the 16-month-old child went missing. I believe the mother was the person who called in the 911 call saying that the kid was gone.
Yeah.
We gleaned from the press conference, a suspicious death. The family is cooperating. I just have so many unanswered questions. I know everybody else does, too. Some interesting facts. DCFS was at the house earlier that afternoon. Is that correct, Ryan?
Yeah, we don't exactly know what points that DCFS was there before the child went missing, but they did visit at some point that day.
And I had heard before there DCFS had reports or checked on that house due to some part of negligence, perhaps, but they found nothing that would have looked dangerous for the child.
Right.
This child, a 16-month-old child, was reported missing and was found This is my question. In the family home from where the mother called, or in a different home?
It sounds as though this was the family home. I don't exactly know where the phone call itself was placed, but a family home. We know that the body was discovered in a home in the 300 block of, oh boy, I believe it's the name slipping my mind. I want to say Joliet Road, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But that was really only about a half block from where, you know, police had been searching or the child had last been seen. So it seemed really close.
And if the police were called to that home, my assumption would be they would have searched the house.
Sure.
Which they said they did on Tuesday when they were initially called. But now, obviously, new questions about that. Now that the body was, in fact, discovered in the home, we don't exactly know what that first search entailed.
It's strange, too, because you would imagine a missing child would be the most thorough of searches, that they would just go through every possible nook and cranny of a house. It's almost inconceivable. I mean, I wasn't there, so I don't know, but I don't know how you would miss something like
unless
that.
Unless maybe the body wasn't there at the point they searched.
That's what yeah.
Well, and they had witness accounts from neighbors who said that they did see the child wandering in the neighborhood before she went missing. So, yeah. You know, they were under the assumption that, you know, maybe this 16-month-old did just kind of up and walk away.
And it's been known to happen. I mean, that's right. When they're discovering. My heart goes out to the family because I just can't imagine that with this horrible outcome.
No, there's nothing worse.
So we'll keep you posted on more details as they come forth here on WGN.
We'll take a quick break. We have a lot more show. You can reach us easily at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I'm actually having some trouble with my new glasses, so I apologize for that.
What's going on with your glasses?
I'm old, so I have what the old folks would say bifocals.
Yeah, bifocals.
Where you need it for distance, and then the reading glasses. Now, you just get your readers at Walgreens.
I just got a 3-pack, $12. I'm set for the rest of the year. They're stylish.
They do look good on you.
Yeah, thank you. Proud of
I look like Garth.
You do kind of look like Garth from Wayne's World.
And it's kind of funny because when I wake up in the morning and my hair is kind of all over the place and I don't have makeup on and I put my glasses on, my son Dylan is the one that pointed out I looked like Garth.
It's party on.
He did say that to me. Party on, dude, too. So here's the thing. When you have bifocals, they have this new thing now and they're called progressives.
What does that mean?
There's no line. Like if you looked at my glasses, in the old days you would look at someone's glasses and there'd be a line right in the middle of them.
Yeah.
They don't. It's just an invisible line, but I can see far awesomely. Like I can't believe I haven't had glasses before.
What's the farthest you can see?
To Maine.
Oh man, those are good.
I know.
Those are great.
My main man. Yeah. Man Maine. I can see really far and I can see really close. But it's the mid-range that it's messing me up.
Like, I never thought of that.
Looking at the computer, I don't know which.
Is it blurry? What is it?
I guess it's better if I put my, I don't know, I'm just not used to them. So I'm sorry, that has been a problem.
Give it a few days. You'll be fine, Garth.
Party on, jerk.
I didn't really think about it, but
they really are.
There is
now I want you to give us all licorice.
Do it.
I love Wayne's World. To me, it's a compliment.
Yeah.
Are you guys doing any of that stuff in Aurora? They're celebrating all year long.
We had
the 25th anniversary.
We had some people on.
Who?
To talk about it. Didn't we?
Ro had Tia Carrera on.
Oh.
And both my sons went to Hollywood Boulevard to see Tia Carrera because they showed Wayne's World.
Mm-hmm.
Party on. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
She looks amazing. She was my first female crush, you know.
You should have told her that. I bet that would have
been. We didn't talk to her.
You should have gone in and talked to her. You should have gone to the fest and
I'm
talked
over
to her.
On the 4th of July, they're going to try to break the world record for most people headbanging to Bohemian Rhapsody. That's what they're going to do in Aurora.
Where is that
going to
be? In Aurora,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be one of the events surrounding the 25th anniversary.
Is there a Garth lookalike contest? Cause perhaps I can participate.
It wouldn't be fair. Anybody else in the contest would just quit as soon as they saw you. So you here's a weird spectrum, but James Spader and Garth Elgar, and you don't, you wouldn't think that if somebody looked like one, they would look like the other, but you're able to pull both off somehow.
A little Tom Petty, too.
A little bit of Tom Petty.
This is without makeup, of course.
Yeah, yeah. You should do a one-woman show at the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse where you play all your favorite characters.
No, but it's funny because, you know, you'd think I would take it as a slam when my kids told me I look like Garth.
It's a compliment.
And they thought it was cool. Garth is our mom.
Yeah, what?
Party on, Mom.
What else would a young boy want than to have their mom look like that? That's perfect.
I don't know. And I'm also laughing at all the texts that are like so polarizing with Gilbert Gottfried. There are six texts that say, oh my God, he's the funniest thing on earth, and six texts saying, get this guy off the air.
It's so, you know, I was explaining to a friend of mine the other day, because they said, are you guys still talking about Trump a lot? And I said, in all honesty, not as much. You know, like during the election and after the election, a show didn't go by that there wasn't some Trump related stuff. And he said, why do you think that is? And I said, everybody reached kind of a saturation point. And we noticed here that if we just said the name Trump and nothing else, if you or I just said Trump and just left it quiet, you get a whole bunch of texts going, yeah, bake that guy. That guy deserves to be put in his place. And other people were like, oh, come on.
But all we said was the name.
Right.
We didn't even offer an opinion.
Right. Do you remember there was one day that we were talking about something and Trump's name didn't even come up? It had something that nothing to do with Donald Trump. And we got this long text from somebody who goes, if you guys are going to harp on President Trump all day like you did. And we didn't.
I know.
His name didn't even come up. All right. So the comparison is Gilbert Gottfried, who, yes, he's very polarizing. People tend to either love him a lot or not love him a lot.
Not a lot of middle ground with Gilbert, unfortunately.
I know.
He had me crying with the old Groucho Marx.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Totally.
I'm telling you, when I was a kid, it didn't make sense. And I mean, he illustrated that point that the same Groucho Marx that was in all those movies with his brothers, that he could be the guy that would pop up on Dick Cavett and just, as Gilbert did, just talk really slowly about nothing.
And I remember the beret.
Always.
I remember that with the cigar, of course.
Remember toward the end of Groucho's life, he would be on Hollywood Squares a lot. And again, on paper, you go, boy, if I need a couple moments of nonstop hilarity, I'm going to Groucho Marx's square to block.
Yeah.
And then they'd ask him a question, and he wouldn't even try.
And you know what really confused me? My sister was a big Marx Brothers fan, so she kind of turned me on to the Marx Brothers at an early age, and I had a Groucho t-shirt that mm-hmm. I used to wear around when I was in, like, junior high, and people would look at me going, who's that? Oh, never mind.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And what bothered me, or I guess it didn't bother me, but it confused me, is watching Groucho Marx movies, the Marx Brothers. In some movies, his eyebrows would be really shiny, like he just colored them on. And I know he added them.
With his mustache.
Yes.
It was a grease paint mustache.
But sometimes it was shinier than others.
Right.
Other times it looks like, I know he's drawn it on, but it's very matte.
Yeah.
And then other times it would be so shiny that it would bother me.
I know.
And I knew it was drawn on in both of them.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm not sure why they weren't a little bit more careful of that.
Like, didn't they needed to powder it maybe or something.
They were trying to make it look real, but it did not look real. And yeah, the mustache and the eyebrows were grease painted on. I don't know why. To make them look more surrealistic, I would imagine. Now, for a long time, Channel 7 on New Year's Eve would run back-to-back-to-back Groucho Marx or Marx Brothers movies. You get to see three in a night. Loved
Day
that.
Day at the Races.
Uh-huh.
Night
at the Circus. Yeah. Night at
the opera. Lydia,
oh,
Lydia, the Encyclopedia.
Lydia the Tattooed Lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really like the Marx Brothers, and now I don't think my kids have ever seen the Marx Brothers, and I'm kind of curious to see what they would think.
Here's, like, when I described it to my kids, because I don't think my kids have sat through an entire Marx Brothers movie, but I would say to them, you know, it's like Airplane. It was like the older version of Airplane, and they would nod and smile, and then they would go, and what is Airplane again? And then I have to remind them, because again, your average teenager, or around that age, Airplane is an old movie to them.
I guess, but my kids have seen Airplane maybe, I don't know, because they're boys.
Seen it a bunch?
A bunch of times. In fact, Dylan and I went to a garage sale over the weekend, and he bought Wayne's World. We have it, but it was on DVD, and it was 50 cents, so he's
why
like,
not?
I need an extra one, why not? He bought The Meaning of Life, Monty Python. And
yeah.
I said, oh my God, have you seen that? That's really good. And he goes, I have not watched 1 minute of Monty Python. I think that's a good introduction.
It is. Yeah, it is.
For someone who hasn't watched the series, which again, I will go back. My mom and sister used to watch it on TV, and I would sit there and I would laugh when they laughed.
Not
because
understanding
the jokes. Could not understand the British, the thick accent.
Right. Right. I know.
What's on the telly? I do believe it's a penguin. My sister got a cast iron penguin that to this day still sits on her telly. But I just would laugh when they laughed because I couldn't understand that thick British accent.
Yeah.
You picked it up right away?
It took a little getting used to, but that's when Channel 11 on Sunday nights would have that block of all British programs.
Fawlty Towers.
No Honestly, The Two Ronnies.
I forgot about No Honestly. I loved that show.
Yeah. So,
wait, Slim Pickens back in the day, wasn't it?
Slim Pickens was on. I remember he had his own show in British TV. But so you got kind of used to the sense of humor being a little bit different, you know, and obviously, even though it's the same language, it's spoken differently in England. So you got to account for that. But yeah, that was fun, those Sunday night blocks on Channel 11. I loved it.
Another DVD he bought, one of the best movies I have ever seen that I was just telling him about, Office Space.
Oh, yeah.
50 cents.
Hysterical.
You should come garage sailing with me.
50 cents.
I know.
It's a bargain.
Quick break. More to come. You know, on the what is it called?
The
bonus hour?
On the bonus hour on the stream, yeah.
That Rolling Stones exhibitionism is going on at Navy Pier. The last time I called it exhibitionism, someone thought I made a mistake. Doesn't she know the difference between exhibit and exhibitionism?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's called.
Because which have you been arrested for? I can't remember.
Not for error. So we are going to talk to a couple of people who have something to talk about.
Some legends.
Legendary people, we'll tell you about that. That's coming up on the stream right at 12:05. And we're going to talk to Patrick McDonald about what's going on in the movie world. Is that coming up next?
That's coming up right after the news. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, along with Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, chief guide for Chicago Film Tour. You want to go to ChicagoFilmTour.com for all your information. And those tours are up and running as we speak, are they not?
No, not yet. We're delaying the start of our season just because of volume, basically.
Yeah.
And
how do they do it?
It's volume, Wendy. That's how they save us money.
So private tours still available, ChicagoFilmTour.com.
Excellent, excellent.
All right.
You are just returning from one of the biggest film festivals that this country has, and that's the Tribeca Film Festival in New York.
And this was the first time I did an outside festival outside of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And go big or stay home, I guess. And I was very nervous going in, very nervous.
Why would you be nervous?
You know, it's the Big Apple, man. I'm the coming in from the second city to the Big Apple.
But they don't know that.
No,
you
I know.
You look like you
I
could
know.
Be from New York.
Everybody was saying, just be yourself. And it was like Oz and Disney rolled up in one. It was just fantastic.
For people who have never attended one of these bigger film festivals, it's movies all day and all night.
It is. It is a overstuffed version of everything you want to know and be in regard to film. I mean, it's just the red carpets are like Mad Magazine. There's a celebrity, 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 celebrity.
Mm-hmm. That's why you were nervous.
Well,
because it's a big thing.
It is. It's huge. And that's, and you don't know the lay of the land. You're going in. You don't know that neighborhood. I mean, that's why I was nervous. Yeah. And, one of the great things about it is we had our own publicist who called me before I came.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got there, that's done. I didn't know it. I'm like,
why would that be?
Well, because they have to go off and do,
they have a billion other things to
do.
They just set you up and then you're on your own, buddy.
Yeah,
with your Yankees hat. Jeez.
Can anyone attend these or is it only for people?
Well, I mean, anybody can pay to attend, yes.
Yeah.
But,
they got you in the side door.
I got very lucky. I not having done an outside festival But basically when my application said yes, I was going to find a way to get there. And
right.
Everything came together so beautifully that I can't express how magical it was.
And Patrick, fill me in on this, but I've always been under the belief that because these films are kind of uncharted waters for many people, this is the first time people are getting to see them,
mm-hmm.
the movie company is going to go out of their way to make you happy and make you like them so that there's good word of mouth. They bring the stars out. They do Q&As after most of the films.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't attend a lot of the evening stuff where they doing Q&As because I was doing the carpets at that time. But yes, mm-hmm. they're going to trot out everything.
When you say doing the
possibly.
Carpets, you brought a steam cleaner with you.
That's right. I have a service in every city, and steam cleaning happens to be New York. So that evolved from something else, but we'll talk about that later.
Give us some of the big names. Who were the big name stars and directors that you saw there at Tribeca?
Okay, so the first night was Ron Howard and his new show about about Albert Einstein called Genius, which is fantastic, by the way.
Is it really?
Jeffrey Rush playing Einstein. And Rush was on the carpet, and he was together with the young Einstein. You know, they had a young Einstein.
I've been called that.
That's right.
Exactly. I forgot. And that's in your yearbook, isn't it?
This All is right. before or after he opened the bagel shops. When do they focus on this? Now, is this a movie or is this a made-for-TV?
It's Nat Geo. It's a miniseries.
It is a miniseries.
Yeah.
Because getting Jeffrey Rush and getting Ron Howard, those are big names
big
to be
names.
Involved.
You know, interesting as the Chicago connection, Gigi Pritzker and Oddlot Entertainment bought the rights to Walter Isaacson's book called Genius and the story about Albert Einstein. And Howard was like, yeah, I want to do that.
Good.
So Imagine got involved, and the rest is history. But so I did the old red carpet pro that I am, even though they do it on a smaller basis here in Chicago. I noticed that they were motioning him to get going. So what I did is I darted right next to the shoulder to the person who was interviewing him last and got my question in.
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
What was your question
My
for Ron
question
Howard?
Was on his first film and his first shot
would,
as a
would
director.
Would that be Funny Car Summer?
No, that would be Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, Bill was wrong?
Sorry about
He's wrong!
Sorry about that.
Mark this date down, Kevin. It's never happened before.
History.
Grand Theft Auto.
History.
I love that video game.
Grand Theft Auto. And maybe it isn't Grand Theft Auto. Maybe we're missing
the
video
game.
So maybe we're both
Funny Car
wrong.
Summer.
No, it's not
no,
Funny
it's not.
Car Summer.
All right.
77, Wendy.
And who are we talking about?
Ron
Howard, his first directorial effort. So anyway, he was acting in it, too. That was part of the thing, because he was doing it for Roger Corman. And he said, I was in the first scene. So he said, I called action, I walked in, and it was lousy, and then we had to do it again. Oh. So that he did not print his first take.
No, how about
that? That was my question, and he kind of, it was a beautiful little reminiscence, too.
You know, the story that he always tells, and Andy Griffith also would tell, was that even when he was a little boy, when he was playing Opie on the Andy Griffith Show, he was fascinated with the process of filming it all, and he would always talk to the cameramen and say, how are you going to make this happen, and what are you going to do with this? So even as a little boy, he had it in his mind, I'm going to be a director someday.
So the big carpet I wanted to go to as a boy of the 70s was the one for Burt Reynolds' latest film, which is called Dog Years. And I interviewed Burt about 4 or 5 years ago. He was getting a little frail then.
Yeah.
Now he's very frail.
Yeah.
But he told me in my interview that he feels every film on his body. My knee from Deliverance.
Corvette Summer.
My shoulder.
Night Shift, it says.
No, it's not Night Shift.
Wow.
No,
go
he made
go further
right,
in the directorial.
Yeah.
So he did Eat My Dust as a actor, and then they gave him the chance to direct.
Yeah.
It's not, we just mixed it up with this.
We'll figure it out. Wendy's on
anyway,
it. She'll get it.
Yes, she is.
All right, so you wanted to...
I wanted to see this legendary carpet, and I signed up too late, but I just went to the place. I just, there was just, you know,
I'm Patrick
no
McDonald.
That's
They're not going to say no to me.
Right.
All right, good.
So it was a melee. Why? Because Bobby D came into the room. The co-founder of the festival, Mr. Robert De Niro, took his pictures, get this, with Burt Reynolds and Chevy Chase.
Oh. Oh, how about that?
Oh, man.
Is
Chevy Chase also in the movie?
Yes, he does like a little bit in it, you know, like his best friend or agent or something.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. And it's a typical Chevy appearance as a cameo. He's just kind of mugging.
Yeah.
But but the film has its flaws, but it's very emotional. And they do a unique thing where they use green screen to put old Bert with young Bert. So he rides along with the bandit, and he talks to the guy from Deliverance, you know. It's really fascinating.
Patrick's right. It's Grand Theft Auto.
It is a Grand Theft Auto.
There were two shorts before
but
this was
very nice.
1977 Grand Theft Auto.
You threw me off, man.
He scares you like that.
He does.
I'm sorry.
He's done it many times.
I didn't mean to frighten you.
Why I have appeared on this show.
I did not
mean to frighten you. I appreciate that.
So may I ask if Mr. Reynolds himself is older and more frail, How does he get through this movie?
It's a different kind of performance from him, and I don't know if it's just because he's as old as he is, you know, or they took it in a direction where he would be this way. But it's a beautiful performance; it really is.
Well, here's what people forget about Burt Reynolds, because the sex symbol thing is always the thing you think about with Burt Reynolds. He was the number one box office star anywhere for about 3 or 4 years in a row. It's hard to imagine, but Burt Reynolds was the number one guy at the box office.
Playgirl.
Yeah, and then there's that's what I mean. That's what people always
Cosmo,
think about.
Actually, not Playgirl. I know you like Playgirl, but it was Cosmopolitan.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, they did the first male nude fold-out, and that was Burt.
Burt Reynolds.
I unfolded it right away.
Hello. That was so notorious back then.
Yeah.
My mother recalls being with my sister in the mall. It was 71, 72. And one of her friends came up, "Have you seen this?" And she was like trying to shield my Catholic sister from it.
You don't want to see that. Nope. All right. We'll take a quick break and then more with Patrick McDonald. He's fresh from the Tribeca Film Festival, and he has stories to tell you. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Patrick McDonald is here. He is film critic extraordinaire over at HollywoodChicago.com, chief guide for Chicago Film Tour. You got to see this.
Right.
All the greatest sites that have been used in movies in and around Chicago. ChicagoFilmTour.com has your ticket information. All right, tell us more about Tribeca.
This was only in New York, I guess this could happen, but this was beautiful. I was doing a carpet for Anne H. She's doing a new film called My Friend Dahmer, which is about the high school years of Jeffrey Dahmer, believe it or not. And Hayes plays Dahmer's mother. They shot it in the same house.
In the actual house.
She said she was in the bedroom, because that was the holding area, and realized it was the mother's bedroom. And she said, "I looked in the mirror." She said, "I don't believe in ghosts or anything. I looked in the mirror, and it was just too creepy for me." She said, "I never take selfies or anything like that, but I took a picture of that because it was just so wild."
That's where you have a shadowy figure over your shoulder. Is this a scary movie? Is this a comedy?
It's a kind of indie drama, I would call it. You know, it's not exploitative. It really is exploring his, you know, early development, just to see what direction he was going. So anyway, I'm doing this carpet, and right before it, Rosemarie DeWitt from La La Land, who I interviewed during the Chicago International Film Festival with Damien Chazelle.
The director was
on the carpet. Mm-hmm. So I got the picture that I took with her, and I said, "Hey, Rosemarie, remember? And she came up and hugged me.
Oh.
I thought, "Oh, that's great. That's a great moment. I'll savor that for a while." So I was in the press lounge the next day, and I'm sitting there just doing the thing, and who walks in but Rosemarie DeWitt. Mm-hmm. And we talked for about 20 minutes and took a beautiful picture together. And I'm like, doesn't get any better than this, I think.
Congrats.
Thank you.
That's very, very good news.
Thank you. It was very good.
What did you see at the festival that wowed you that we should all be watching for?
Well, there's an independent film. There's a couple things I saw that I really liked. The one is called Flower, which is about a Juno-like teenager. You know how the new trend for teenage movies is to make these teenagers have the experience of like 65-year-old men.
Exactly.
You know, they're all above it, you know. Mm-hmm. So this was very Juno-like, and then it takes a dark turn, man. Oh. And it was so cool and so wild. By the end, it was just flip me out.
That's
really?
Flower. Any name actors that we recognize?
Zoe Deutsch, Adam Scott.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'd recognize?
Yeah. Adam Scott, of course, from Parks and Recreation.
Oh.
Yeah, he's
a great.
He's getting a lot of work lately.
Yes, he is. He's doing a lot of character stuff, and he is fantastic
Good.
In this movie.
Good.
So,
Flower, and
yes,
what else?
And then I saw the a documentary called Shadow Man, which I really enjoyed. It was it was talking about the era of graffiti in New York when Tribeca was bombed out, and all, you know, the places I was staying were virtually uninhabitable, and it was when Basquiat was working and Keith Haring. Mm-hmm. So the third guy is Richard Hambleton. Hambleton is his name. He was always mentioned as the first guy. He was a shadow man guy. He would go to a wall and create shadows, silhouettes. And when these articles were being written in the early days, he was the one being mentioned. not Basquiat, not Herring, but they became the big three, and he still lives in the East Village.
Oh,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And of course, it was a real, it was a, also explored the art world. And, you know, they always say that modern art is rich people proving how rich they are, you know.
Right.
And recently a Basquiat went for $40 million. I know.
Not bad.
And it
there
did.
Was a movie about him a bunch of years ago, I remember.
Yes. Yeah. And anyway.
All right. At every film festival, there's always one film that gets such negative press. There's always people walking out on it and booing it and screaming and crying because of it. Not this time around?
Didn't hear anything like that. I heard some good reputations on some films, which I didn't see, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You know, I was there. I spend a lot of time here in dark rooms. So when I'm in New York City...
Watching movies, Patrick? Or some, something you want to not talk about?
Both.
All right.
And... So, yeah, I saw a dozen films, okay, but...
In how many days?
In 6 days.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, but I could have saw 3-4 days.
That's too much.
Yeah.
That really is.
Well, your perception and reality start to fade away, you know? I don't know. I don't want to say this out loud because it may be, you know, some of the my fellow film critics.
Just whisper it to us.
Some of my fellow film critics, that's McDonald. He doesn't like movies, but he likes being a film critic.
But what you just said is impossible. You can't be a film critic if you don't love movies,
I
right?
I know. When I say that, I say the proliferation of 24/7 movie watching.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of guys that do it.
Do you think the audiences at a film festival are more kind of giving in that it's a film festival, so something might be a little bit funny, they make it very, very funny. If something's sad, they make it very sad. Do they play it up a little more because it's a film festival?
I think, you know, you're anticipating a different experience at a film festival. Mm-hmm. You're anticipating that you're going to be wowed somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for example, the Burt Reynolds movie, I was looking forward to it, but I kind of stepped away a bit. And... You know, when you're anticipating something like that, sometimes the flaws will get magnified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what you have in film festival audience are very knowledgeable film buffs,
mm-hmm.
and they're going
pretentious maybe sometimes a little bit.
Sure,
yeah.
Although they're my people,
so
I'm pretentious.
So, no.
So
all right,
you know,
all right, that's good.
You know, I'm demanding all the
time. Now that you've done one, are you more anxious to go and visit more? There's a bunch of good ones.
As long as I can keep going to Tribeca, I will.
But you've done the Chicago Film Festival. You've covered that, haven't you?
For the last 8 years.
Yeah, so yeah, it's not that different.
It's not that different.
Not in your hometown, though. It's just, it is different. That's what's different.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's challenging yourself outside your comfort zone.
That's it. Got to do that, though.
Which is being on the Bill and Wendy Show.
Of course. All right. So what in theaters now? What's coming out this weekend that we should know about?
Yes. The only thing I saw for the weekend was an independent film called Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent. Now, this goes on the culture of celebrity chefs. Apparently, Tower was one of the first breakouts.
Mm-hmm.
He had a famous restaurant in San Francisco that became the talk of the nation before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And then he disappeared.
Yeah, because I don't even know the name.
Right, exactly. So, and you know, Batali's on there, Bourdain, they're saying, you know, this is the greatest chef you've never known.
Hmm.
And they do the film almost like a Citizen Kane, where he's reflecting back. And then they'll show flashbacks and flash forwards and everything. And he took over Tavern on the Green in 2014, came out of retirement, came out of exile to go to one of the most high-profile New York restaurants, which has been derided by the critics for years because of its commercial and touristy aspect. You know, oh, let's go to Tavern on the Green. We'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
No, you only say that if you're from Duluth or something. You know, you don't.
New Yorkers don't look at it that
no,
way.
No, they don't. And New York critics, food critics, are very quick to deride Tavern on the Green. So he pretty much came in there. You know, he was going to come in with a gauntlet, and it couldn't bring it around. And that's really the elegy for him. And it's fascinating film. I gave it 3.5 out of 5.
It's in limited release,
but it's opening here in Chi-Town. And we have The Circle with James Pondsold and The Devil's Candy with by Sean Byrne. They both weren't screened for critics, but
always a good sign.
Devil's Candy is a horror film for you horror buffs. And
oh, I've seen clips. It looks very scary.
I've eaten The Devil's Candy, haven't you?
Sure. Of course. Of course.
We don't have a lot of time, but like you to give a farewell to great director Jonathan Demme, who passed away. We found out yesterday.
Yeah. The great critic Dave Kerr on Facebook said he was one of the most human, a humanist approach to filmmaking. And I think if you see any of his great films like Something Wild, Melvin and Howard, Stop Making Sense, Swimming to Cambodia, Rachel Getting Married. You remember American Playhouse on PBS?
Sure. Yeah.
He did a sensational one with Christopher Walken, and I'm almost positive it would be on YouTube. And it was called Who Am I This Time? Do you remember that?
Yeah,
that?
I know that play.
It's an amazing.
They made a movie of it. I'm trying to remember who was in the movie, but it's a great story. And
yes.
Christopher Walken did it on the Playhouse 90.
Did they make a movie of it?
I think so. I
thought the
remember.
only thing was a Walken, the Walken piece on
Playhouse.
Oh,
was that it? Yeah.
It may be.
All right.
Is he wrong twice?
I don't know. You know what? He's got to look up his own research.
They do that. A lot of high schools will do that as a play also. It's an easy-to-do play. I mean, if there is such a thing as an easy-to-do play.
Do you know the plot of it?
A little bit. Everything.
It's about a local local community theater.
Yeah.
And they keep getting the same guy to do all the roles because he's fantastic.
Right.
But otherwise, he's socially inept.
Yeah.
He only shines when he's on stage. And can you imagine Walken doing that role? Fantastic.
He'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patrick, thank you so much.
Blessings.
It's Patrick McDonald, film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com and chief tour guide over at Chicago Film Tour. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com for all the information and to sign up. We'll find out what's coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.